I'm Michael Johnson. We're here at Research at Intel Day, and a lot of ideas are being presented here. I'm particularly in a pretty interesting center called the People-Centered Innovation Area. So I'm here with a couple of folks who are working within the Digital Home Group, a pretty interesting portion of it as well. Jay Mellican, who's a research scientist and design researcher in the Domestic Designs and Technologies Research Section, and then also Todd Harpel, who is a PhD anthropologist who is working in domestic design and technologies research. And welcome both of you to the podcast.
Thanks.
Thank you.
You're doing really interesting work. I think this is where sort of, you know, the rubber meets the road, you know, the chip meets the dip, whatever you want to call it. You know, tell me a little bit about, you've been going around the world finding out how people use the technology that's put out. Maybe you can begin with a little bit about the areas of the world that you covered.
Our project is part of a broader project. Our group is investigating the home from different perspectives. Our particular project looks at the relationship of handheld devices in the home. Another one of our projects looks at television in the home, and the third looks at PCs in the home. And by investigating the home in all these different ways with teams of design researchers and social scientists, we hope to understand what people, how they use space and how they use technology now, and what they consider what a home is. Because for us, we might think very short, you know, in sort of short-sighted terms of a home is a box. But it's not. I mean, I think an average thinker might think of your home as just a box, but I think that's a house. That's a physical plant. For a lot of people, the home extends beyond those four walls. We're trying to understand how that works for different people around the globe, and that takes us on research. We've covered in our group 14 countries, I believe, this year, looking at different households and how they use space and technologies within those.
And we're not just talking about an online survey. We're actually talking about traveling to all these different countries and gathering information directly in people's homes, right?
Yeah. Over the past 5 months, we've been in Turkey, Italy, Japan, Taiwan, each place 2.5 to 3 weeks. And we interview families. We ask them to, we visit them in their homes. We ask them to take us on tours of their homes to show us their technology. We ask them to design mobile devices with us. And then the thing that we're showcasing right here is one of the stranger methods maybe that we use. In every country, we ask people to show us what they're carrying in their bags with them. We have specific questions that we ask. So we'll ask people, for instance, show us something that reminds you of home that you're carrying with you in your backpack, your purse, your wallet.
We're trying to get, like, not only looking at the physical nature of what they're carrying, but what is the emotional nature? What is the connection? Why are they carrying it? And, for instance, somebody may carry a cell phone, but for interesting reasons. Like, for instance, in Japan, we met a gentleman who was carrying a cell phone, and we asked him to show us something he doesn't normally show other people. And we thought it was interesting. He started pulling out his cell phone. What he was doing was diving for content on his cell phone. And then he pulled up an image of a temple. And we're like, why is this something you don't show other people? And he's like, well, it's for Yakidoshi. And of course, we're like, well, what's that about? You know? And it turns out that at specific ages, for men, it's age 41, it's a bad luck year. And in order to mitigate some of the bad luck, you go to this particular temple. And he keeps this on him, this image of this temple on him, to remind him of his visit to this temple.
So what about women in this? Because I know that in many countries, the role of women is, I think, pretty key to how society, at least the societies, define themselves. What role did women play in your research, and what did you come up with?
Well, for us, it was fascinating. We have a third researcher on our team named Brooke Foucault, and she led a lot of participatory design sessions with women, specifically with women, because often there are things that women might feel comfortable telling to other women, especially in certain cultural contexts, especially when it regards things that are in their purses. So in this particular project, they were showing Brooke things that they carried with them that they, for instance, may not show to other people. And there are, of course, the obvious things, you know, that people might carry, you know, the feminine products and so forth. But beyond that, she was finding things that women didn't really necessarily show other people. Some things that identified them as mothers, perhaps. Maybe they didn't want to show that off to other people. Here's a woman who, when she was asked to show something she doesn't normally show to anybody, she responded with a page with prayers from the Quran. She says it's important for her, but people might judge her if they saw it, so she keeps it hidden. And that's from an example in Turkey. And so everywhere we go, we're spending a lot of time understanding the user needs of women in particular, because it seems to be such an underserved segment of the technology market.
Well, it sounds like a fascinating project, and I wish you both a lot of luck with the research and information that you gathered out there in the field. This is Michael Johnson, and we've been speaking today with Jay Melikan, who is a research scientist and design researcher as part of the Digital Home Group, and taking a look at international cultural perspectives on what makes home, what makes a sense of, you know, where that home ends, and also with Todd Harpel, who is an anthropologist in the Domestic Design Department. It's been great talking with both of you, and good luck with the project.
Thanks.
I am Ashwini Ashokan, and I'm a design researcher at the User Experience Group, headed by Genevieve Bell.
Pretty interesting section here. It's called Exploring the Social Lives of Television. I think people aren't usually used to thinking about television and social life, but it certainly is tied in directly with
Absolutely.
It. Tell me a little bit, Ashwini, about what your piece of this is and what you did and the areas that you traveled in as
well. Sure. This project, Exploring the Social Lives of Television, is a part of larger ethnographic research that's happening at the Digital Home Group at Intel. And what we're doing here is to study people from different cultures around the world, and to understand how they use technology very differently from place to place. And with reference to this specific project, we've been to China, India, the UK, and the US, four countries. To study people in their homes, what they do, how their lives look like, how their cultures look like, and how they use TV, not just TV, but TV as a part of larger ecosystem of like electronics, like equipment that they use. So the relationship also between the TV and the people, also between TV and like other devices that they use in their homes.
How long were you on the road?
So we were, it took a total of 4 months. But we were doing between 2 and 3 weeks in each place. So there was China in November, India in December, UK in January, and US in February.
What kind of questions did you ask people about their life and social life with TV?
Right. So since it's ethnographic and design research, like some of what we did was to ask people about their daily lives, things, activities they do, like what does a typical day look for these people. We went on home tours, so they took us around the home, speaking about what different rooms mean to them, how do they think about space, how do they think about relationships, like how do they speak about control or like values and experiences that they have within the home. We made people do these little photo books, so they had to take pictures and like write about something. We had like little blurbs, like this is something I made, this is something I value, and made them write about it. And basically, we did a lot of that to see what do they really value in these homes across the world, and how differently they are from culture to culture, place to place. Also, a lot of like participatory design exercises. So we'd give people things to work with, and then say, you know, design your most fancy ideal TV, and then they'd come up with something. What we're really interested in is not what their solution is, but they speak about their existing problems and existing issues around their daily life, and they connect it to, you know, a future television and end up talking about what they really value in
it's,
their daily
it's,
life.
I guess involved in the idea that it's eventually this is conscious design.
Right, it mm-hmm. is. Mm-hmm. So sort of... And a large reason why we did this was to challenge these stereotypical notions of what a TV is. Like, people think, all of us think about TV as something that sits in a living room or something that, you know... is a screen onto which you project content. But what we've heard from these different households is just completely different from those stereotypical notions that all of us have.
I mean, did you find a lot of difference between how people are using the technology here as
yes.
opposed to the other countries?
Oh, yeah. It is pretty different. It's, for example, in India, people are watching three-hour movies on their cell phones. Three-hour full Bollywood movies on their cell phones.
Which means that there's the infrastructure and the encoding
yeah,
and all
absolutely.
Of that to accommodate
in the cities,
that.
Absolutely. And there's like a lot of these kids who actually figure out how they can eventually take most of them. In fact, the ones that I met had known how to take that movie and then convert it to a format that they could watch on the TV. So it, in some way, it all ties back to the TV. TV seems to be like central to this ecosystem.
It all
in some
ties
way.
Into to the needs of
to
it
the
as
needs,
well. Because I
right.
think that certainly, you know, when we think about a movie here
uh-huh.
in the United States, or many of us, you know, they think about the way a movie's perceived here.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's maybe 90 minutes.
Uh-huh.
You know, but a movie experience
oh, yeah.
that would be,
oh, yeah.
to be shortchanged
oh, yeah.
in,
oh, yeah.
in India
oh,
by
yeah.
Bollywood standards.
Oh
certainly.
Yeah, and to think about it, it's not. And they don't watch the same thing in the same room. They're watching like a comedy clip with their parents. they share their cell phones. They're willing enough to share one cell phone with their parents and, like, watch, you know, just the comedy clip with the parents, the, you know, the part that they probably don't want to watch with their parents, with their friends in a coffee shop. So there's a lot of issues. There's a lot of experiences around this value of togetherness, for example. And so the same thing is so different across different countries. And what I think the exciting part for us really here is to see how we can sort of drive innovation through these specific values. How do you start with these value systems and, like, such rich experiences that already exist in these homes and sort of use the TV to facilitate that in a way that's really useful for people? Because people perceive these TV in specific as a very stable technology.
I've been speaking with Ashwini Ashokan, who is a design researcher in the User Experience Group, part of the Digital Home Group, and in this fascinating area of ethnography and how that's and how that's working in design here at Research at Intel Day. Thanks for being with us on the podcast.
Sure.
I'm Michael Johnson, and I'm here with Brent Doyle, who has a pretty fascinating piece of technology here in front of us. Brent is a self-described product guy. Tell me what your role is at Intel.
I'm a technical marketing engineer. I work for the Intel Client Systems Organization, and what we do is we actually we come up with the system designs, and we partner with various OEMs. So, for example, the Community PC is the result of one of those systems where we came up with the design and worked with an ODM out of China to actually produce the actual shipping product.
So you said the Community PC. Now, a lot of folks might not know what it is, but they probably heard kind of about the idea.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we've got an actual box in front of us. This is the Community PC.
Yes, it is.
And maybe you can describe what it is and what its purpose is.
So the way it works is it's designed to be used in remote villages. So you'll have a kiosk owner. And the business model is that the local villagers, if they need a wedding certificate or they need some kind of government paperwork, they could actually go to the kiosk owner versus having to spend a day of their own time going to another village. They can go to the local operator, and they'll give their information to the kiosk operator, and they can actually enter the information in the computer and then upload it on their behalf to the supporting agency. And so that was the model, and that was actually a model that was discovered by our researchers when they were over in India researching possible usages for Intel technology in India.
Now, we should describe this machine a little bit, because I think that one can sort of think about a PC. Sure, we've got the CPU box, we've got the screen, but we've also got a car battery as
We have a built-in UPS inside the PC. And what we do is we actually connect a standard car battery, just a regular 12-volt battery. And the PC, when there's actual electrical power available, will actually charge the battery. And when there's a power outage, the battery will just take over. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to actually remove the power right now. And you'll see that the PC is powering the monitor as well as the system. And without the power, as you can see, everything is still working. We actually have indicators on the front of the system that will actually let you know
that it's now running on battery.
Exactly. We have battery LED status so that you can actually see how charged the battery is.
How much would a unit like this cost? Because I imagine if it's designed for the field or for the village, or the bush, that the cost point has got to be pretty low on it.
We're looking at right now with complete system and operating system, it's about $500.
$500.
Yeah, and that'd be U.S.
Pretty good price point for a computer that does what it does. What kind of systems does it operate?
In terms of operating system? Right now it's Windows Home Edition. We are looking at adjusting the software so that Windows Starter Edition is supported. And also we're looking at seeing if we can maybe do a Linux version as well. But right now, the currently shipping product is Windows Home.
I see you've got another little interesting little feature here that looks like a little filter that goes in between the fan vent and the fan itself. Now, is that a little like for dust, or what is that for?
You got it. It's exactly for dust. What you do is when you need to clean it, just pull it out, slap it on your leg, run some water over it, and pop it right back in. And we actually got to do some real-world testing with it at our Beijing IDF. There was actually a dust storm that was in the area. So we were actually cleaning this in front of our audience just to show them how well it works and work with flying colors.
If folks want to find out a little bit more about the Community PC, can they check it out online? Is there anything online about it?
Yes, there's literature online for the Community PC. You can just go up to www.intel.com and on the search. I don't have the exact URL, but the information's up there.
NPC.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I've been speaking today with Brent Doyle, who is involved with the design and implementation of the community PC. We'll have a picture of it on the website as well at podtech.net. And here it is, charging a car battery and then also running off the car battery when necessary, and is getting designed for use in developing, developed, and I guess some developed countries as well, but in developing communities. And fascinating work. Thanks, Brent.
All right, thank you.
So I'm Wendy Mart. So I'm a senior researcher with People and Practices Research. My background's actually in design, but many of my colleagues have backgrounds in anthropology.
What was involved in your particular piece of this people-centered innovation and technology project? And I see street smart spaces, but what does that mean?
Well, what we're looking at is the future of streets and how we can think about technology and how we can create applications for the future of for future technology that can be used in a street space. So that might mean by people who have shops or who are traders in a street, people who work or live in a street. So we're trying to think about the street as a whole, not just individuals or individual businesses, but thinking about the street as a community and a neighborhood and a sort of network of different people. A lot of our time was spent interviewing shopkeepers and traders who live sometimes and work there. So many of them were living above that shop. And trying to understand, for instance, what it means to have a small business in a small street. What does it mean to, what do you have to start a business? How do you keep your business going? What makes a business successful? And so we've been we've been in two places. We've been to Brighton in the UK, and we've been to Xiamen in China. And we're about to go to Florianópolis in Brazil. And so we're looking at very different streets, very different cultures, but in some ways very similar problems for small businesses. Like, what is it, you know, how do they keep their business successful and extend that reach? How can they bring more people in? How can they get their name out there? We're seeing a lot of the same issues, but it may be reflected in different ways. In the UK, it's a lot about startup costs were very high, and I think in China, it's just not a tradition of advertising. It's more about it's about local and it's about service. And I'll just, if I'm great, people will come to me, and it's sort of not necessarily kind of about projecting outwards and advertising outwards. So it's kind of a different ways.
I've been speaking with Wendy March, as a senior researcher in the People and Practices Research Division here at Intel, about street smart spaces. And is there a website where people can check that out, or is this sort of all going to happen more at the other end?
This happens more at the other end. There is a link on the Intel research site to my profile, and that does have a short description of the project.
And what is that, intel.com/research?
Yeah, and there's if you go to meet our researchers, you can meet me.
Okay. Well, thanks. It was great to meet you here on the podcast, and good luck with the project, and have a good time in Brazil.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to it.
My name is Alex Afiraglu. I'm an anthropologist. I work for a group called Domestic Designs and Technologies Research, which is part of the Digital Home Group at Intel. The mandate of my group is to understand people's daily lives in their homes all around the world. So understanding what home spaces are like, what people are doing in their homes, the types of experiences they would like to be having in their homes, and what values they have, so that we can help Intel build platforms that respond to people's daily lives and really reflect the types of things that are important to them. When the industry talks about digital homes, I think that it tends to be relatively large homes where you have a lot of technology and there's enough room to put all that technology because there's a lot of space. The average American home is about 2,400 square feet, 18 to 2,400 square feet. These real-life digital homes are about max 350 square feet. And unlike kind of imagined digital home that's occupied by a busy nuclear family with the mother and the father working and the children with their extracurricular activities, these are being occupied by older adults. Older, very tech-savvy adults, it turns out. And finally, these are homes that have intermittent access to infrastructure. So rather than having an always-on internet connection, it may be that your internet connection is on when you've hit a Wi-Fi spot, or your internet connection is on if you have spent $7,000 on a satellite system that you installed on the roof of your RV, and you have an unobstructed view of the southern sky.
Now, let's scale it back a little bit. Not everybody can afford a $285,000 mobile home. What other kinds of folks that were dealing with active mobility did you interview?
We interviewed also a series of budget travelers or backpackers. Mm-hmm. These are people that stereotypically are seen as not wanting to spend a lot of money on stuff, although of course they do end up, if you buy a round the world ticket, it's quite a bit of expenditure of money. People save up for years to finance these trips. You know, you also get RVers who try to save money and maybe living in less expensive RVs than some of the people that we interviewed. And we interviewed those types of people as well. But for the backpackers, they couldn't necessarily take their home with them physically. So for them, it was a process of recreating the home on the road. And whether that meant taking certain objects with them that reminded them of home, or recreating home every time they went away by making connections to other travelers and sharing stories and picking up objects along the way that they could then take home and place in their home to tell the story about where they've been. So for example, we met one young woman who was doing an around-the-world ticket, a woman from New Zealand, been out on the road for a year and had a diary that was not just for her, but it was for everyone she met to write in the diary so that when she came home, she would have this sense of community with her and the people that she met while on the road.
I've been speaking today with Alex Afirglu, who is an anthropologist in domestic designs and technologies research here at Intel. And thanks for being with us on the podcast today, Alex.
Thank you.